This is episode 88 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. I'm recording from a cold and snowy Colorado this week. So it's a good week to be inside in the warmth of my cozy office. And I'm super excited about today's Extraordinary Women Radio guest, Petra Kolber. Petra is the author of the best-selling book, The Perfection Detox. This is such an important topic for all of us. So how often do you have that inner critic voice show up? That you're not enough, you're not smart enough, you're not thin enough, you're not strategic enough, pretty enough, whatever enough. Petra is on a mission to help us remove the idea of our not enoughness, because you are enough. We are enough. One of the pillars of the work I do with my clients is to help them master their mindset, to recognize what stories are showing up, what fears are stopping us, how are we playing small. Petra's work on detoxing from perfectionism is brilliant. When we're stretching into a bigger presence in our brand and our visibility, we want to show up at our best. It's natural, right? That's how we want to show up. We work hard at it, and perhaps what we perceive as our perfect best. But as Petra so eloquently shares with us on this interview, is that people are attracted to our imperfections, not our perfection. It makes us real. It makes us relatable. And today, she's going to share how we detox from all the perfectionism that we think we need. Let's meet Petra Kolber, the author of The Perfection Detox. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Petra.
Thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate your time.
I was so thankful that our mutual friend, Dori Clark, connected us. She's just so awesome.
I love Dori. I mean, I actually call her the New York connector. Like, everyone is 6 degrees of separation. No, let's reframe that. 1 degree of separation from knowing Dori. She literally connects everybody in the city. One of my greatest friends and dear mentors that I'm blessed to have in my life.
Well, I had such a fun time interviewing her just a few months back. And so it's fun to bring yours in next. It's going to be a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I have really enjoyed reading your book, The Perfection Detox. And it's so relevant for any of us who are stepping up, for any of us who are using our voice and expanding our visibility. If we're growing our impact in the world, this is such a relevant book. It's just so important. And we can't strive for a state of perfection when we're expanding like this. Like when we're stepping into new spaces, we can't be in this state of perfection. And I've really been recommending your book to a lot of my clients recently. Tell us why you decided to write this book.
Well, I often say, you know, your pain can become your passion. And, you know, prior
that's
to
the truth.
I know. I wish it was different, but it seems to be the way to do great work in this world is to be connected to it in some way. And so, Cami, before being a writer and a speaker, and I still am to a certain degree, I was in the fitness industry for 30 years. And
right.
I became a fitness expert, per se. And everyone's like, oh, write a book, write a book. And I was like, I don't really want to write another diet book or fitness tips or any of that. And then as my journey in fitness kind of shifted and the expectations around being a fitness expert, you know, some expectations I put on myself, some I think were put on to me, not through the companies I worked with, but just by the external media sources,
right,
you
know, right.
This ideal. And I was getting this incredible pain around this idea of, I thought to be a fitness expert meant I needed to be a perfect fitness expert. Now, this is something I didn't share because, you know, trying to be perfectionist, you certainly don't, you know, share your struggles. But what happened, Cami, is, oh gosh, one conversation I was having, I was doing a keynote for a group of women. There's going to be 200 people in the room. And suddenly I sidetracked. I don't know what took a hold of me, but I started mentioning this idea of slight anxiety around this idea of being perfect. Mm-hmm. And I felt the air kind of leave the room, and I felt the room kind of lean in. I was like, huh, I've hit a nerve here. So I thought, okay, I could go back to my perfect, you know, canned talk, or let me take a risk and go down this alleyway for a little bit. I maybe touched on perfection, anxiety, stress, panic, and all of that. And in the past, Cammie, after one of my presentations, you know, I'd have a really nice applause, and people would leave the room and rush to the next, you know, offering. And I finished my presentation, and there was a line of women down the side of the room waiting to talk to me. And wow. It was at that moment I hit a nerve big time. And the big thing that they were saying is like, you suffer with anxiety. They couldn't believe it. And at the same time as not believing it, it suddenly allowed them to exhale, because suddenly this person that they had kind of seen as perfect had revealed her imperfect, most flawed self. Mm-hmm. And it gave them permission to be human and maybe explore what we would consider a shadow part of ourselves and bring that to the conversation, as well as just shining the highlight reel and sharing that with everybody. And that's at that moment I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but that was the start of the beginning of the book.
And what was what happened in your life that you started to recognize that, you know, that tendency towards striving for perfection? What happened at that point that made you even bring it up?
Yeah, for a long time, I didn't realize that this anxiety that I was feeling, I went to therapy for 7+ years, and we were trying to, because I had these chronic panic attacks. And we kept trying to mine what was the cause. And we never really touched on this. We went into all my history. But the idea of being perfect never really came up for me. But somewhere along the way, I connected the dots. I was like, oh, it's this idea that people want me to be perfect that is what I thought what I thought was helping me was actually hindering me. What I thought the audience wanted, Cammie, was actually separating me from my audience. Mm. And this is one thing, what my therapist did say to me at one point. She said, here's the thing, Petra, no one can relate to a flawless self.
Right.
No, we weren't talking about perfection, but somehow it's like just a closing comment as I was leaving her office, because no one can relate to perfection. I was like, huh. And I wasn't even realizing that was something I was putting out there, Cammie. But without realizing it, I always showed up perfectly. I looked perfect. I did the perfect routines. And there was very little room for error. So what I began to see is, look, I'm a type A person. I'm highly ambitious. I want to be excellent. But somewhere along the way, my idea for excellence and healthy striving had overstepped its boundaries. Right. And what had helped me in the past was now beginning to hinder me in the future. I'm not even going to say hinder me in the present, because perfection doesn't reside in the present. It's either residing in the past, like kind of beating you up for a mistake you made,
right.
Or it's giving you anxiety for the future, for all the ways that your life could go wrong, because perfection doesn't know what to do with the present moment, you know? So yeah. I certainly wasn't residing in the present, but it began to give me a doorway to go, maybe the things that maybe served me in the past are no longer serving me in the way or the viewfinder that I'm now using.
Right, right. And I think this awareness, and I think for all of our listeners, as you're tuning in and you're listening to this and you're thinking about how you show up on a stage, with the, you know, new groups of people that you're meeting, or even within your own communities, how you show up just being real and letting down the walls of projecting perfectionism, because it doesn't serve us. Our audiences don't connect with us from that perspective. And, you know, this is what you discovered is that everybody started to really tune in. And you were doing some, I mean, just so our audience knows, give the audience some background a little bit about what you were doing in the fitness world that was, I mean, you were top of your game in that space. And, you know, you were on Special K boxes, right?
Yeah. You know, I have to date myself. I was on VHS tapes. You know, I worked with Nancy Kerrigan, George Foreman, Dara Torres. I was on a Special K box. I still have one of those. I got to say, I'm so proud of it now. But at the at the time, Cammie, all I could see was like, oh my God, I'm not skinny enough to be on the back of a Special K. You know, and it was so subtle. I didn't even realize I was having these thoughts. So, and I'm not saying I had a great, great, great career. I really did. But I think I could have been, authenticity is what we talk about. It's the buzzword. And there's this little part of me that goes, yes, of course we want to be authentic and we do need to share our struggles. And yet, you know, if you're a leader, whether you're speaking, like you say, you're writing or you're, you know, a coach, we certainly don't want this to be a therapy session. I mean, I always ask myself these three questions when I'm deciding to share a piece of my, you know, my backstory, the struggles. I'm going to say, is this going to be a help? And if the answer is yes, then it's a good thing to share.
Right.
Is this going to be a burden? Because sometimes if the person we're working with is an empath, without us even realizing it, they're actually going to take on our struggle, even though we move through it. But the third, and I think the most important question is, am I looking for anything in return? Am I looking for a power play? Am I looking for sympathy? Because for some, you know, for a while there was things in my past that I felt could have helped people, but I still hadn't worked through it. Mm-hmm. So I do think we need to work through our challenges, but we don't need to have all the answers. We do need to be on the other side of it to then be able to say to the people we're trying to serve, I don't know your story. I don't know your struggle. I'm not in your shoes, but I can say with absolute certainty, I know what it feels like to be dealing with whatever it is. You know, my story is different. And this is what helped me get through to the other side. I do feel, I get nervous when we don't want to be that authentic if we have, especially if we're in the space of leadership, we need to have done the work to get through to the other side. And then from a place of authenticity and leadership, we get to stand beside the people who want to help. But also, you know, they need to know that we have the tools and strategies to help get them up and over to their best future self.
Right. And I think that part of that is really striking me right now is the point where we have to do our own work, right? We have to understand where we have our own not enough-isms, if you will, you know, whatever those might look like, and know that those come up for us always. I mean, it's not like we can just turn off the button and those will go away forever. But how do we deal with those? And what's the work that we need to do in our, you know, as coaches, as consultants, as, you know, helping other people through that sort of a thing? What's the work we need to do to address our own not enoughisms?
Yeah. And I, you know, the interesting thing, Cammie, I mean, people say to me, hey, so you wrote a book about this. You did a TEDx on this. You speak on this. Do you ever have any doubts? I'm like, are you kidding me?
Every day.
I mean, I think here's the thing. We've all heard about the imposter syndrome. And if you haven't, I think it's really important to know that we all feel like imposters. You know, therapists feel like imposters. The people we admire feel like imposters. And it's not that we're not going to feel like that some way at some point, but what do we do with that information? And for me, it's like in the past when I felt like, oh my gosh, they're going to find me out. I'm a fraud. It would have paralyzed me, Cammie. And now I go, oh, that's interesting. I wonder why that, I look at it through the lens of curiosity versus judgment. And so I love, like, if something comes up for any of your listeners, like it might be a negative tape, you know, an old reel that you thought you'd work through, and all of a sudden it comes up for you again, instead of going, I can't believe this. I'm a coach. I teach this work. I should know better. If you just simply go, huh, that's interesting. It allows us to look at it from a compassionate lens, from self-appreciation and inquiry. And then without beating ourselves up, we go, oh, maybe there's something unresolved here. Or I also invite you to consider that it's not unresolved, but you've just stretched yourself again. You've stepped out of your comfort zone. You may be getting onto a speaking stage that's larger. Maybe you're taking on clients that you know, you wouldn't have taken on before. So this idea of being an imposter, it doesn't go away. But each time we level up in our own lives, our inner critic, as I like to call it, she'll come back. And this enoughness, I think, is really important to talk about, this idea of not feeling enough. For many years, Cammie, my inner critic and my judgy self would say, you're not smart enough. Mm-hmm. You're not thin enough. Now, I've worked through that because I'm certainly never going to be the smartest person in the room, but I know I'm prepared and I have the resilience and the skill set and the work ethic to do the research. But now my inner critic, she'll go, are you young enough?
Right.
You know, she's just sneaky that way.
Right. So she changes the story a little bit.
She changes the story. She puts on a different outfit. She wears a different lipstick, but she's still there. And so now I'm just going to go, that's interesting. Why is she showing up? And normally right now it's because I am trying something new, something in particular I have in mind. And, you know, the rational, you know, logical thinking mind is going to go, well, maybe you are too old to try that. But who is that to judge? The heart and the skill sets and how I feel in the world. I want to keep learning and being a student of life until I take my last breath.
Yes. Yes. And I think if we approach it from being a learner, that knowing that we're going to be stretching and growing, hopefully every day, every month, every year, we're stretching and growing into new things. And when we can recognize that inner critic showing up for us, that person who shows up, I mean, I'm a big fan of Tara Moore's work where it's, all the inner critic work and naming that inner critic. And because then you can start to identify it much more quickly and help shift that story.
Yeah. And know that, you know, most of the time, she is just trying to protect us,
right.
But actually protecting us for many of us at this point is actually holding us back from making the impact that we want to make in this world, because you can't grow from a safe space. It's just impossible. I wish it was different, but the more we grow, the more challenged it's going to be. And if we can look at that from a place of like, this is awesome. Okay. I'm stretching myself. And yes, I am going to feel afraid.
Yes.
Because I think this other idea of never feeling afraid is also, you know, it's a misnomer. And if we go, I shouldn't be feeling afraid. And I just invite your listeners, and I do this myself, when I'm feeling afraid, I'm like, it's just a sign I'm about to do something that really matters. These false fears. I mean, yes, of course we have real fears. If our kids are about to step off the curb into traffic, you better be afraid. If you're hearing footsteps behind you on a dark night, you better be afraid. But these false fears that come from our thoughts, it's just like, this is just a sign that I'm about to do something I really care about.
Right.
So that's a good sign. Yeah.
It's totally a good sign. So you have a 21-step process in your book. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the reason I broke it down into 21 steps is because I was beginning to see, I'd done a lot of reading on this subject, obviously, and there was a lot of very great, good research out there that I've incorporated into the book, but it was very dry, often written by men, and I had to look up every word because I couldn't understand what they meant. And then you have amazing thought leaders who I adore, I follow, and their greatest fans. You know, I love Brené Brown. I love Elizabeth Gilbert, all of that. But yet I was beginning to hear, not necessarily from those two, because I just think everything they do is magnificent, but I was beginning to see a lot, you know, as we scroll the feed, just let go of perfectionism. Okay. So you tell a recovering perfectionist, just let go of perfection. I'm going,
just
okay,
let go. Just
how do I do that perfectly?
you flip the switch, right?
Yeah, just flip the switch. And then you feel even worse because perfection, it's tricky. And the more I do the research, it's different and it shows up differently in each one of us. So we kind of really need to be our inner coach. So we're all busy. We're all high achievers. So I thought, how can I break this down into bite-sized pieces that we can implement into our day without interrupting our day? And it really follows three phases.
Okay.
And the first one, like you said, it's awareness. You know, this negativity bias, these negative tapes have often become such a part of our background noise, we don't even realize it's there. We know we don't feel as joyful as we could. We know we feel a little bit of static between our head and our heart, but we don't quite know why. So when we can get like this awareness, like, oh, this one thought keeps showing up, this idea of enoughness, or this idea of I'm an imposter, or whatever this negative thought is that's sucking the joy out of our life. And that's the first invitation I bring everybody to say, hey, when you have this thought, when you think about the word perfect, because it means different things to all of us, does it add joy into your life or does it suck the joy out of you? Because I can't answer that question. And for some of your listeners, I might say, hey, you know what? I think of trying to be perfect in my work life, my married life, my relationship with myself. And I actually, it excites me. And then I'd say, well, this is awesome. I want to know what secret sauce you're eating because I know very few people like that. But then this book is not for you. But, or, and if you go, okay, I'm trying to be perfect in my work life. I'm trying to be perfect as a mother. I'm trying to, and I just feel drained. Then this might be something to explore. So the first one is awareness. Second is acceptance. There's two different things, working through a process from a place of judgment or from acceptance. And it's really hard. You know, we work really hard on forgiving others, on accepting other people's flaws and idiosyncrasies, but we're really good at beating ourselves up.
Yeah, we are.
So yeah, so it's working from a place of curiosity, appreciative inquiry, through a lens of acceptance. And then the third part is action. We're not going to suddenly sit on the couch eating bonbons and just be so self-love that we don't do anything. But from a self place, from a place of self-love, we get to do the hard work and the heart work to, I used to say to fall in love with ourselves. And I've actually stopped saying that. I'll start by saying we do the heart work to like ourselves. Because I honestly believe that for many of us, and I say this in the book too, that the longest distance any of us will ever travel is from our head to our heart. And that's the journey that we need to take to first like ourselves and then fall in love with ourselves. And then it's from that place. And I know your listeners are doing great work already, but I truly believe, like you said, until we do the inner work, will we ever tap into our fullest potential to be able to help others to the degree, to the wisdom, to the breadth of genius and greatness that you are, that the universe is expecting of you. And it's not saying that what you're doing right now isn't amazing, but we cannot be the best coach, leader, speaker, writer, blogger, whatever, podcaster, if we have not done the inner work of coming from a place of self-love or even let's start with self-like.
Yeah, I love that, Petra. I really do. And I think that, you know, just the concept of it's the longest road between our head to our heart, and knowing that that's a practice of really making the space to connect our head to our heart and to open up to the love that can be there is such a beautiful gift.
Yeah. And I think, you know, who teaches us? Look, we go to school, we're online doing all the courses. I am the queen of, you see a course, I'm buying it. You know, make seven figures, bright and shiny. I'm like, buy, click. So, but that's great. But here's the thing. We're not going to do anything with those courses. We are not going to be our best selves until we do that journey. And then people go, well, I don't have time for that. I say, you don't have time not to do this work.
Right.
Because if you really care about being the thought leader, the change maker that you want to be, and I know all your listeners are that, or they wouldn't be tuning in, everyone has time. And it's not going to happen overnight. And you do bite-sized chunks. And I always say, you know, life is interval training versus steady state. You're going to have days when you're like, oh my gosh, I feel so joyful. And there's going to be days when you're like, I barely want to get out of bed, but we show up anyway for those around us. And that's life. That two steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, four steps back. And I think when we can have these conversations and celebrate our wins together and, you know, kind of collaborate and commiserate in the not so great days, that's what this whole thing called life is about.
Yes, absolutely. So I have a question for you, because something piqued my interest as you were talking about this, you know, the process that you've built. And in that middle, you've got, you mentioned appreciative inquiry. So is it the appreciative inquiry methodology that you leverage in the midst of that?
Yes, absolutely. Because I went back to school. Yes.
So do I. I use that in all of my coaching work. So that's what really grabbed my attention. So
yeah. So just a quick backstory. A lot of the work in the book is around positive psychology. Yes. Because what happened for me, Cami, is that I had spent 30 years in the fitness industry and I was like, something is missing. And I was Googling, I don't even know what I was Googling, but suddenly, you know, the universe brings to you when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so I took a year off. I stepped off the stage. I went back to school through Kripalu and Tal Ben-Shahar, who is my mentor, and studied positive psychology, appreciative inquiry, and all of this, like looking from the, and this is what this work is about. When you accept yourself,
your beautiful strengths of you and all, right?
Yeah. So that's exactly what we're doing. Not beating ourselves up. We're not going to get lazy, but we're doing it from a place of all that we are versus all that we think we're not.
Oh, very cool. And I believe in that type of methodology so much. I leveraged appreciative inquiry back in my corporate days, you know, over a decade ago. But when I left, I did a lot of work with some appreciative inquiry masters, if you will, Diana Whitney and Amanda Trostin Bloom, and they did some. It really helped me connect back into what my gifts were. It helped me see things from a different perspective, and it's how I found my way stepping out of the corporate world into building my own business. So, you know, I just really have a lot of love for that type of work.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Look, anything's going to get a bad rap. You know, we had this whole thing around happiness and positive psychology. Right. And so there's some pushback on that. You know, it's like, well, you're going to make people feel worse, you know, and I actually had to change my language too, because for a long time before I really dove into the perfectionism, I was teaching happiness and I created a whole movement called Moving to Happiness. But what was happening, I was making people feel worse because I would have these messages offline when I was posting about, you know, focusing on the good, and people are like, Petra, how do you stay happy all the time? I was like, oh my gosh, I'm part of the problem.
I'm not happy all the time. We all have our moments, right?
Exactly. So I began to share, you know, a little piece of the other side of the work that we need to do. And it's all about balance, the good and the bad, the hits and the misses, the wins and the losses.
Right. It's the journey. It's the journey. So you say that there are three different types of perfection. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, and they show themselves up at different times. So one that people might be aware of is the other-oriented perfectionist. So that's like, you know, you're the person we talk about, oh, they're the devil's advocate. Or the person that's always, hopefully you're not working. Hopefully everyone here is an entrepreneur and they're working for themselves. But if you're not, if you're working for a boss who's always pointing fingers at everybody else, that is an other-oriented perfectionist. So that means someone expects everyone around them to be perfect. Mm. And what that means is we can sometimes do this with our children. I don't have kids, but I do see this in parents. And without realizing it, we are looking at our children as a reflection of who we are. And the thing about this is it never cultivates great relationships because it's always like kind of a blame game. So there's that to look at. Then here's the one we see all the time that I think is really ramping up, socially prescribed perfectionism. And I think everyone listening deals with this. This is our ideal of trying to show up and live to the expectations that social media and media places upon us. And whether we know that everything is being photoshopped. And I just loved the other day that I saw that CVS is now putting stickers. I'm not being very articulate about this, but they're now going to have a whole aisle around their beauty products that shows which pictures have been photoshopped and which have not been retouched. I'm like, okay, great. That is a step in the right direction.
Exactly.
And I'll say, as much as our head can analyze that, okay, this picture has been photoshopped, the next being stretched, and, you know, and then on television, I know there's no such thing as a work-life balance, you know, juggling mom, you know, our heart still has a really hard time separating what they're selling us to the truth of our life. And then there's the self-prescribed, the self-oriented perfectionist. And that's one where there's pieces of this that can be really healthy. Like, this is what I think I strive for at the beginning, Cami, and then all of a sudden it became maladaptive and it overstepped its boundaries. There's pieces of us all here that we don't want to let go of. High achieving, showing up, diligent, doing the work, being a great friend, being a great mom. You're probably on time. You check your emails. You check your projects a couple of times. That's all good. Mm-hmm. But it's when we can't separate trying to strive for excellence and even perfect work from being perfect. Mm. When we can't separate our actions from who we are, it becomes a very slippery slope. When I make a mistake, I stop saying, oh, I made a mistake. And I start believing, oh, I am the mistake.
Mm. So how do you catch yourself in that? What's the trigger that you can catch yourself?
A lot of it is a feeling. A lot of it, like I say, you know, emotions, thoughts are electrical, emotions are chemical. Like, before every emotion, there's been a thought that's triggered it. But those thoughts are so fast and furious, and often they've been with us for so long, we don't notice it. So the first thing we can do to notice it, how am I feeling? Mm. Why am I feeling uncomfortable in my own skin? Mm. Why am I feeling a little depressed? Why am I feeling a little anxious? And oftentimes, those are not comfortable. We move through them. We don't allow ourselves the time to sit with them with appreciative inquiry through a lens of compassion, going, not what am I feeling, but what's under this feeling? Right. And if you can sit with it a little bit, like what happened before that feeling? And if we can spend 5 minutes just kindly exploring and reflecting, not ruminating, just kind of reflecting on, ooh, what was that thought that came up? If we do that enough, if at the beginning we might not be able to pinpoint it, and that's okay too, like, huh, and just go, oh, that's curious. I had a thought, but I don't know what it is yet. And I'll move on with my day. But let's note to self, this is a journey worth exploring. Eventually, and I don't think it will take long, if you, every time you have that feeling, it could be shame, embarrassment. Mine was embarrassment over making it seemingly, like my embarrassment and shame in ratio to the actual mistake I had made was so out of proportion that I began to go, oh, this is a problem. This is not a healthy reaction to a small inconvenience or a small error or even a small like disagreement with someone I have. I would carry that weight with me. And I was like, oh, there's something interesting here. If I sit with it long enough, what's under that shame?
Right. And you could track it back. By stopping and pausing in that moment, you could say, oh my gosh, this is what triggered it. And then start to see how out of sync or sorts that was with the impact of it, really.
Yeah. And for me, what it came down to, Cam, was, I think for people to like me, I need to be perfect. Mm. That means never causing a ruckus, never stand, you know, be careful how I stand up for myself, push, but don't push too hard, you know, speak up, but only when it's convenient, don't make anyone feel uncomfortable. Oh my gosh. And the list goes on. And that's when I was realizing, oh, there's work to be done here. I cared way too much about what people thought about me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really brilliant. It really is the stop and pause in those moments and track it back. And then we know what to do with it. So let's talk about social media, because I think in today's day and age with social media around us, and why is this perfection detox so important with all the social media we have?
I think there's two things here, Cami. I think one is we are not good anymore at being bored. We don't know what to do.
Hallelujah.
We don't know what to do with spare time. So the minute if I think back to before even the smartphone was there, if I was bored or I was waiting in line, I'd be waiting in line. I might be listening to music on a cassette tape. Don't judge. But, you know, you're not jumping on your phone. You know, so we don't know how to be bored anymore. And so what happens is we often go on to social media when we're bored, which is the worst time to go on because it means we're not being attentive and we're not going on with a good intention. So a bored mindset is the perfect place for your inner critic to go, you thought your life was pretty good. Well, look at so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. They did what you did and they, you know, they just forget about it. So there's two things here. I mean, A, we're being bombarded. I mean, we used to just have media and it just never stops. Our heart and our head are overwhelmed. So, and here's the hard part. We need to be on social media for our business.
Absolutely.
We can't ignore it. So what I would encourage people to do is like, notice when you go on how you're feeling and notice when you get off how you're feeling. So if I'm bored, don't go on social media, pick up a book, or just be bored. It's amazing what creativity will come to you. That's why I don't think we're as creative as we used to be, because we don't allow ourselves to sit in the white space anymore. So, hey, go, what would happen if I actually allow myself to be bored today for 5 minutes? You might find the next business plan or the next business idea. It's amazing what happens in that white space.
Yes.
And then if you go, okay, I'm not bored, I just kind of want to go onto social media, I always ask, what do you want to bring to social media? What do you want to get? Are you going on to see what other people are doing and celebrate their wins? Can you go on to share one positive message that's going to uplift the conversation? I would say maybe go on for like a minute and share something great. Maybe look at a couple of your favorite, you know, people that you're following or friends and look at their wins. And then get off and then ask yourself or sit with yourself and go, when I get off social media, did that bring me more joy?
Right. It's really be intentional about it is what you're saying.
Exactly.
It's being really intentional. And, you know, it's earlier this year, I interviewed Tammy Simon of Sounds True. And
oh, yes. Amazing.
I know. And it was one of the things that she said that she was doing right now. She says, you know, I've meditated for a long time, for a lot of years. She says, but now I'm just stopping and I'm just sitting in a chair. And I'm not doing anything, right? It's like, it's making those kinds of choices to just stop and not feel like you have to be on social media. But when you do go on social media, to get really intentional is what you're saying.
Exactly. And I think it's the, you know, it's the spark joy. It's, you know, as where everyone's sparking joy. Is it Marie Kondo? Marie Kondo, I think. Yes, yeah, spark joy. The art of, you know, clearing out your life. If your news feed is not sparking joy, then, you know, just got to get rid of some of those people.
Yes, 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 yes. If it's putting your blood pressure up every time you look at it. I actually tell my husband, I was like, quit looking at that because, you know, when his blood pressure starts going up over some of the, you know, the political things going on, it's like, just turn it off. It's not bringing joy to your life.
Yes. Yeah, stop and delete.
Yeah.
Stop and delete.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, let's see, what else do I want to ask you? I think that any advice for our listeners on how to recognize if perfection is helping or hurting them?
I think it's a simple question. There's nothing wrong in wanting to be a high achiever, doing excellent work, being magnificent. But in every area of your life, I just simply ask the question, when I think of being perfect in this particular area of my life, does it bring me joy? Yeah. Is it energizing? Is it exciting? Or does it suck the joy out of me? And the answer will tell you if perfect is helping or hurting.
Right. And that's how we resonate is going to be a direct correlation to how we're feeling off of that, you know, that perfectionist moment. And if we can, you know, we're wanting to raise up how we resonate in the world, not deplete how we resonate in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, you know, perfect for some people, that might not be a trigger word. If I hear the word perfect now, it's like a little antenna that goes up, right? It's like, oh, I could go and help them. But again, for some people, they say the word perfect like they would say tomato. It's just a word. So again, I just notice the emotion that it brings up. And if it's a joyful emotion, don't change a thing. And if that emotion is depleting you, maybe let's unpack this a little bit and see what parts of perfection we can keep that are really helping us and inspiring us, and which parts can we kind of tweak and let go of.
Awesome. 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 So where can people learn more about you and your work, and where can they get your book?
Well, yes, you can find me and my book at Petra Kolber, PetraKolber.com. And you can find the Perfection Detox there. And social media, it's just Petra Kolber. Talk about social media. It's Petra Kolber on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Awesome. 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 And our final question we always close with is, what three pearls of wisdom, not that you haven't given us plenty here, but what three pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience today?
Oh, I think the first one is don't take anything personally, mm-hmm. which is so hard. And alongside that is don't let the critics get to your heart and don't let the praise go to your head. Mm. Second one is be kind to yourself.
Yes.
Be kind to yourself, because then when you can be kind to yourself, you can't help but be kind to others. And then I think the third one is just know that we all are more alike in our struggles than we are different, and that we're all in this beautiful, messy life together.
And it's a wonderful life that we can all be messy together with.
Yes, absolutely. Paint outside the lines. You know, jump in the sandbox and celebrate the failures as well as the successes.
Oh, totally. It's so funny. That reminds me of a Toyota commercial. It was like a Toyota 4Runner. And it was, you know, the teacher was at the front of the room saying, draw between the lines, stay between the lines. And then all of a sudden, the person is like driving the four-wheel drive over all these bumpy roads and driving outside the lines. And I'm like, yes, that's my favorite advertisement of all time.
Yep. Put, keep us inside a box. We will rebel. Hopefully
right.
with very powerful messages, but we will not be put in a corner.
That's awesome. Well, Petra, this has been so much fun. And thank you for everything that you shared with us today. I know my listeners are going to really love this, and keep doing the beautiful work that you're doing in the world.
Thank you for inviting me to be a part of your show.
You have a good day. I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to visit me at CammieGelner.com to find out how you can make heartfelt connections to mindful strategies to ignite an abundant flow of cash and clients into your business. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.